Previously on Willing to Adapt.
So today we're going to be talking about the origin story of Cinderella, some of the many versions of the fairy tale. Specifically, we focused on Perrault, the French version from the late 1600s, and the Brothers Grimm version from 1812, which are vastly different. So which of the two versions do you like more?
This is actually a hard one.
It is a difficult one. I think the Grimm version's more compelling.
Yeah.
And you can definitely, it definitely seems like the Pro version's more sanitized.
All right, so now on to Disney.
The 1950 Disney animated films. And I'll go out on a limb and say, you know, people might not like this. Disney's 1950s Cinderella is not a love story. There's this modern feminist view that if you need to be a strong woman, you need to be masculine. And so it devalues femininity. He's like, he's going to marry whoever the slipper fits. And he's like, but that could be anyone. He's like, I don't care. Have you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt. Hi, welcome back to Willing to Adapt. This is Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
And this is our third part episode for Cinderella.
Correct. We're back.
For you folks out there who have not listened to the first two parts for this, please go back and listen. You will get a lot more out of this, I'm sure. The first part episode, we talked about the original fairy tales, all the many variations, and focusing more mainly on, you know, the Perrault French version and the Brothers Grimm German version.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second episode, we talked about the 1950 Disney animated film, Cinderella.
And how it's a lot deeper than I thought it was.
Yeah, I'm glad that you enjoyed that.
I did.
And that's very important to understand because today we are talking about the 2015 live-action film version directed by Kenneth Branagh, Cinderella. But this is important because this is supposed to be a direct adaptation of the 1950 animated film.
Well, a little bit more from the fairy tales.
Oh yeah, we'll talk about that for sure. Yeah. So Romy.
Yes.
First question.
Yes.
Can you guess?
So funny enough, I saw this in theaters when it came out.
Okay.
I did. 2015.
I was hoping you would say that was your answer.
Yes, and I really enjoyed it. I remember it was a family event, and it was one of those things where it was like the women in the family got all the kids together to go see it, but since I was a single dad, I just went along. And my daughter and I went, and I remember it was, I can't say I fell in love with it, but I definitely thoroughly enjoyed it. I remember walking away just being, wow, that was really good. Because part of me was kind of like, oh, there's no singing in it. Spoiler alert. And so
there is singing in it. It's just not a musical.
I mean, oh, well, she's singing in the, like, well, she's doing
Lavender
background
Dilly.
Work. Yeah. So I just really enjoyed it. Yeah. So I'm glad I was able to rewatch it.
Right. Yeah.
I did have a little Mandela effect with it, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm curious now.
The Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo song at the end.
Yes.
I could have sworn that was in the movie.
Oh.
That she actually sang that. I even have memory of a scene where she sings it.
Oh, did you dream that?
I must have, because afterwards
she says it
at the end of the movie. I'm watch. It's over, and I'm like, they never played that scene. And I'm like, so I went to Google, and I'm like, did they remove it? Did something happen? And the credits were just starting, and they mentioned that the song is part of the credits. And so I mentioned it to my wife, and she's like, oh, Mandela effect, because we've been discussing that lately.
Nice.
I could have sworn it was a scene in the movie.
Nope.
Special Helena edition
Bonham
out
Carter
there.
Said Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo, and you chose to hear it as a song.
I must have. Yeah, that's weird.
You were on drugs.
That was a long time ago. Who knows?
Jeez.
No, I'm just kidding.
10 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. The world's a darker place. All right. The 2015 romantic fantasy film directed by Kenneth Branagh, Cinderella, from a screenplay by Chris Weitz. It was produced by the Walt Disney Pictures. It's a live-action adaptation of the classic story. It's been brought to the big screen Yeah, sorry, I'm just being dramatic. It stars Lily James as Cinderella. It has a great ensemble cast, including Kate Blanchett, Richard Madden, Stellan Skarsgård, Holiday Grainger, Derek Jacobi, or Jacobi. Oh, it's Jacobi. It's the British way of saying it.
Oh, I'm not sure.
I just know because I remember Kenneth Branagh saying it.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I've been saying it wrong. Derek Jacobi and Helena Bonham Carter. And this film had a budget of $95 million. And the box office was $543.5
million. Wow.
Yeah. And then Disney was like, we got to make a crazy amount of remakes after this.
Oh, no, yeah.
And that was their bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
Fun fact, did you know this?
Probably not.
Out of this one and all the ones that came after it, mm-hmm. this one had the smallest budget.
Really? I mean, that doesn't surprise
and
me.
And it is probably done the best.
Wow. Shows you don't need special effects and...
No.
Mm-hmm.
Well...
Big budgets.
They have special effects in this, but...
They do, but not like some of the others.
No. And this film, literally film, it was film.
Mm.
Did you know that?
I did not know that. So it's not digital?
All the other live-action remakes after this were digital.
Wow.
This was on film.
Huh.
They purposely chose to shoot this on film because film has a specific look to it. Like, it's not completely perfect. It's romantic. It's more vibrant and all that. Like, it's not as clean as digital.
Mm-hmm.
But you find that digital doesn't always work for every story.
Were movies before this already going digital, or?
Yeah.
So,
this was an artistic choice.
Okay. But yeah, so, tell us about the movie.
I don't need to go a whole lot into it. So the Disney had not had done a live-action remake for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to do this one in part because of the anniversary of Cinderella coming at the time.
Okay.
And... originally, Kenneth Branagh was not attached to the project, mm-hmm. and then he ended up coming on later because the previous director had a conflict of interest, I should say. Like, it wasn't the direction he wanted to go in.
Oh, okay.
He wanted to do something different. And this will make me happy, and maybe you happy. One of the original ideas for this mm-hmm. was to make it very action-packed, and Cinderella was to be very modern, very different.
Mm.
And then the company at the time said, we want to stay more true to the original story.
Well, I'm glad they did.
Yeah, but they wouldn't now. But yeah. The movie did amazingly well. Anyway, in a lot of what I had seen before in interviews when I was looking this up with Kenneth Branagh and even a lot of the actors, there was a great respect for the source material.
Mm.
They knew they were going to make changes, but they knew what people liked about the original Disney film.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to stay true to that. But as I said in my previous episode, Kenneth Branagh said, it's extremely difficult to create a film that's an adaptation of a ridiculously popular story.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do with that?
Yeah.
Like, it's such a daunting task. Everybody knows the story of Cinderella. And it's bare bones. Everyone knows the story.
Yeah.
She's going to go to the ball. She's gonna get married to the prince, mm-hmm. you know, all this stuff. Like she's got an abusive family, all these things. But what do you do with that? How do you work with that? How do you change it? And what do you do to exemplify and so on? You know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was what he came to the table with. And so there's a few things they really wanted to show a bit more depth with the characters and a bit more motivation.
Okay.
And the biggest thing is they wanted to give more screen time and personality to the prince.
Okay.
For modern audiences, they were very aware that if there's any sort of love story involved, that modern audiences wanted to see a relationship, period.
Mm-hmm.
Modern audiences, for the most part, don't like love at first sight.
Mm-hmm.
And so they knew that they were going to adjust that.
Okay.
But I think they did it well.
I think so, too.
And what I really appreciate about their version is it stays true to the Disney version, but it also heralds back to the fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
And I would even argue it just feels like a fairy tale come real.
Mm.
Just in general.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like it pulls from a lot of fairy tale tropes.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked for it, in my opinion. What do you think?
Name the tropes.
The father as a merchant going off and dying while he's away.
Okay.
That's the big one.
Mm-hmm. Or any with a prince?
Yeah, the couple falling in love but not knowing one of them is royalty.
Mm, okay.
That one's kind of a fairy tale trope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that.
I see. Yeah. No, I agree. I think that he did his job.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the end, Kenneth Branagh did his job well.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I think what really appealed to me when I first watched it was the fact that it was a story that I knew, like mm-hmm. everyone else. And yet it he brought enough to make it fresh without changing it enough.
And mm-hmm.
and I think a lot, especially today, I think they tend to want to add comedy in so much.
Oh, yeah.
And that often, because like when you last, I think it was last episode, you mentioned the remake of The Jungle Book.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're telling me about it and you're explaining it, in my mind, I'm thinking like if they would have, you know, redone that probably a little later or maybe, or if it wasn't Disney, they probably would have, I could see Brendan Fraser playing the part and it would be.
Well, they did. And that was George of the Jungle.
Yeah, I know. That's what came to mind. And I'm thinking like how, but they throw too much comedy into
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
The Marvel curse, I think.
Well, it's the Marvel curse, but then you also see it with a lot of the movies that they've come out with that like Lin-Manuel Miranda does the music for.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like every character is hilarious and snarky and I'm not going to go there. So what I really like about this live action version is it eliminates almost all the parts with the animals.
Mm.
And there's still a presence in the film and they still actually play a relatively important part of the film
yeah.
in saving her in the end in their own way. But they've cut back almost all that time.
Yeah.
That is in the original film.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they added in more backstory to explain Ella. Because mm-hmm. in this version, her name is Ella.
Correct.
And then later on, the stepsister calls her Cinder Ella,
mm-hmm.
which is very true to the original story. You know, she, in one of the versions, she's called that because she sleeps by the cinders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And her face gets all smudged. And you also get a little bit more depth for the stepmother.
Mm, yeah.
And it's just enough.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need more.
Correct.
And so, yeah, I think we just kind of need to go through it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So, the film opens with the narrator, who is the fairy godmother,
mm-hmm.
who we find that out later, but the fairy godmother's narrating this. And so you get the sense that she's watching over her the whole time,
mm-hmm.
which I like. And it opens with Ella as a baby and growing up and this wonderful golden childhood with her mother and her father. And her mother really endorses Ella's imagination and creativity
mm-hmm.
and kind of like encourages her to hold on to that and not lose sight of that, especially her imagination and like thinking the animals can understand her and things like that, you know?
Yeah.
But then her mother ends up getting sick. And before she dies, she has this moment with Ella where she really imparts this wisdom to her where she explains to her that there is power in having courage and in being kind and to continue to be so.
Mm-hmm.
And so it ends up becoming like a mantra for the film, have courage and be kind. Right.
Yes. And that's last episode. I brought that up in regards to mm-hmm. the explaining the character of Cinderella. And I actually wanted to bring it up regarding mm-hmm. because it was because yeah. specifically well, because of this
they
adaptation.
Noticed that those were a theme in the original.
Yes.
And so they really expanded on that.
And I think each adaptation brought it out even yeah. more so till this one was just explicit. Yeah.
But by having this relationship with her mother like has these parting words to her where she encourages mm-hmm. her to be this way.
Yeah.
And she even specifically says there is power in this. There's a strength in this.
Yeah.
Like that is what helps Ella to keep that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to understand her character if you want to do that, you know? And so, like, the reason, even, like, when her father wants to get married again, Ella, because she loves him and wants him to be happy,
mm-hmm.
like, you get the sense she doesn't really want him to remarry, but because she loves him and she wants him to be happy, she tells him to do it.
Yeah.
Which I think also plays into her continually trying to be nice to them despite how they treat her.
Mm.
Because she did tell him to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And then, obviously, like, he goes off, but before he goes to leave for work or something.
Travels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think he's like a merchant or something.
Yeah.
You get the idea that the stepmother is not the best person,
mm-hmm.
but then they show that she is saddened and a little jealous of the attention that Ella gets from her father.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how they continue to focus on her late mother.
Mm-hmm.
And you get this, you get the sense that she's hurt that the father doesn't like her as much as he likes his late wife.
Yeah.
And then obviously later in the film, without going too much into that, you hear her tell very briefly that, like, she did marry for love originally.
Mm-hmm.
And then he died. And then it left her nothing. Like, she was destitute and she had two daughters to take care of. And then she married a man for, like, the financial support who, like, didn't love her as much as, like, she would have wanted, essentially. Yeah. And now she's left with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And so you definitely get enough of her, for enough depth in her, that you kind of understand why she is the way she is,
mm-hmm.
without it being too much, in my opinion.
No, I agree.
And then obviously it shows they dismiss the staff and Ella takes on more and more responsibility, which even starts before her father dies. Oh man, I love that they did the callback to the fairy tale, the first branch.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes, I like that too.
Mm-hmm.
But well, the sisters asked for roughly the same thing.
Yeah, like a parasol and fan and silk, mm-hmm. and things like that.
And then, except this time, instead of having a mean father,
yeah,
it was a little more. In fact, the whole scene was.
Well, they improved on it.
They did.
Because in this version, it was the first branch that touches your shoulder, because then he has to take it,
mm-hmm.
and think of her, and then he has to bring it to her.
Yeah.
And then he dies while he's away, but then he still gets the branch to her,
mm-hmm.
which is so sad.
I know.
And then
it was a good scene, though.
And then there's that contrast between her and her stepfamily, because mm-hmm. they're like, we're destitute, we're ruined, like we're done for. And then she's clearly upset for the loss of her father, but then she, like, very bravely thanks the farmer. She's like, I'm sure this was very difficult for you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course she cries but like, she's just so kind.
Yeah.
Like, even in her grief, she's thinking of other people, you know?
Yeah, no, the fleshing out of the character, of her character in mm-hmm. particular, the characterization of Cinderella was well done.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Lily James has such a good balance of strength and almost like fragility, but I don't know, she's so good. She was such a good choice. I told you before this that originally they were trying to get Emma Watson for Cinderella. And I guess she refused because it wasn't a role she was interested in. But the way that it said it made it sound like she didn't like it because she didn't like the character of Cinderella.
Oh, interesting.
Because I know for a fact that when she took on the role of Belle,
mm-hmm.
that she fought real hard and changed things to make it more feminist.
From what I know about the actress, it doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
So I'm pretty happy that she was not.
Yeah.
It would have been fun to see her butt heads with Kenneth Branagh, though.
Well, we would not have seen that.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it does show that, like, her abuse with her family, it's kind of slow going.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the live action version, I like that they show that she kind of breaks down, like, when they really openly mock her.
Mm.
Because up to this point, they didn't really mock her.
Yeah.
To her face, at least. But when they do, and, like, they don't let her eat with them, and they call her names and stuff, like, that's when she kind of breaks down, and she feels like she's lost her identity and stuff. And then she takes off, like, on like, this emotional horseback ride, you know?
Yeah.
But then that's when she meets the prince.
Mm-hmm.
And not knowing who it is. And I liked it because her meeting him and having this connection to him,
because
mm-hmm. it's not necessarily falling in love with him so much as she makes a connection with someone outside the house.
Yeah.
And they get along, and he listens to her, and he respects her, and so on and so forth. And that's her motivation for wanting to go to the ball.
Yeah.
It's not just to have fun or whatever. It's to see Kit.
Mm-hmm. Because she thinks he's just like the stable boy or something.
Well, she thinks he's an apprentice. But she
that's right, the apprentice.
But she doesn't know what.
Yeah, it's true.
And so you definitely learn in this version specifically that part of the reason she doesn't leave is because this is her house. This is her family's house.
Yeah.
They've lived there. Their father says they lived there for like 200 years. But like, this is where all her happy memories were. And like, she kind of made the promise to like be there and to help out and so on. Mm-hmm. You know? And so, you know, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. No, I agree.
You still get bits with the animals. I think it's funny in this one, did you notice? It's not just a bunch of random mice, it's like one family of mice.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
I noticed the name, besides Gus Gus, the rest were
Jacqueline.
Jacqueline.
Yeah, but I didn't notice that it was supposed to be like a little family until this time around.
Okay.
Which I liked.
And then it was Mr. Goose.
Yes. In the original 1950s animated version, I already told you that it moves very quickly because it's basically a day.
Correct.
This version is much slower.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like years, months, whatever, you know? And that's everything. Everything's slowed down and spread out. And it's fine. It works.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, because it's not that day, mm-hmm. like she actually has time to make the dress. Like the animals help her.
Yeah.
But it's mainly her working on it, like on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Small, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know, they rip the dress apart. The stepmother says, "You will not go to the ball." And she ends up breaking down and crying. And she's like about to give up. Like mm-hmm. she can't do it anymore. She doesn't see the point. And that, of course, is the moment that the fairy godmother shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And then she doesn't automatically tell her that she's the fairy godmother.
Like she's the beggar woman.
She just looks
something.
Like a beggar, old mm-hmm. beggar woman.
Another trope.
And yes, yes. And yes.
Yeah.
And I liked this version because she doesn't just show up and help her out.
Mm-hmm.
She like tries to seek out kindness from Cinderella. And despite her grief, Cinderella sees the humanity in this person who's in need
mm-hmm.
and helps her.
Yeah.
And it's her doing this good deed for this woman that... And in turn, helps Cinderella.
Because
mm-hmm. then she tells her that she's her fairy godmother and she transforms into the fairy godmother.
Did you like her as a fairy godmother?
I did.
You did?
I did. Did you not? You found her annoying, didn't you?
I found her bland.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought she was fun.
There were times she was all right.
Maybe you need to watch it again.
Yeah. I don't remember. In fact...
I thought she was fun because, you know what? It felt true to the Disney version.
Mm.
The... like slightly absent-minded, quirky, but its own thing.
No, I don't know. I just felt like, because I remember thinking...
I thought it was one of the funniest scenes in the film.
Yeah, it was, but I don't know. I'd have to watch it again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so one of the critiques that sometimes people have is how did her Cinderella's stepmother, stepsisters not know that that was Cinderella at the ball?
Mm-hmm.
And my immediate reaction to that is, well, you weren't that close to her. You also are not expecting her to be there.
Yeah.
And she does look a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But the other reaction is the stepmother does recognize her at the ball. She just doesn't know that it's Cinderella.
Yeah, she says, oh, she looks familiar.
There is something about her. Yeah. And then she's like trying to figure it out.
Mm.
And then later on, she remembers. And she's like, oh, it was her.
Yeah.
But anyway, in the live action version, she's like, Cinderella says, but what about my stepfamily? And then the stepmother says, oh, don't worry, they won't recognize you. And then she like spins the wand over her. And I was like, and that's all you need.
Yeah.
That's literally all you need.
If she would have put glasses on like Clark Kent.
I know. Exactly. Going to phone booth. Yeah. And in this version, there is a motif for butterflies. Her father gives her a butterfly that he brought back from his travels when she's a child. And then there's butterflies on her dress.
Okay.
And they come and go a few times where they focus on butterflies.
Interesting.
Because of the obvious metaphor.
The transformation.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. That she has. And so I think that's fun. That's a new addition, you know? That's fun. And there's just so much to talk about. Let's backtrack slightly.
Okay.
So then after Cinderella meets Kit, the prince, and she doesn't mm-hmm. know it's him. That's when you meet the king and the Grand Duke, who in this version is a villain.
Yeah.
But done pretty well. Like, I mean, he's relatively flat, but it was fine.
Mm-hmm. And he went off to lead the rebellion against the emperor.
Oh, yeah.
Before we continue on, I was surprised at back 10 years ago, these actors meant mostly nothing to me besides the stepmother. This is the first time where I was like, oh my gosh, Game of Thrones, the Borgias.
Well, and Lily James was in Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey.
Which is because she did Downton Abbey before this.
Okay. I hadn't watched it yet, though.
I know.
That's why. Yeah. And so I was like,
and
I still have to finish that. Yeah.
Well, because Kenneth Branagh was saying the prince was in Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had seen Game of Thrones, like, you would recognize him.
Mm-hmm.
But he hadn't been in a lot before that.
Yeah.
And so he and Lily James were relatively unknown.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew that they'd be fine because they came from television.
Mm.
And so they had a lot of experience with the camera and long days and so on and so forth. So in this version, it's actually the King's the opposite from the 50s version.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about grandchildren necessarily. He just wants like some political stability for the kingdom, mm-hmm. which is driven by the Grand Duke. But then he also is insistent that the prince marry a princess.
Mm.
Like, it's what's done, you got to do it. And, mm-hmm. of course, you know, that is challenged by Cinderella when he's out hunting the stag and he says it's what's done. And she says just because it's what's done doesn't mean it's what should be done.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he uses that later when he talks about marrying and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he makes the bargain with his son because he wants to see Cinderella again. And he thinks she's just some common girl, which kind of is. And so the prince tells the father that he will allow the ball, essentially, and if he invites all the women of the kingdom.
Mm.
And he does that because he wants to see Cinderella again.
That's true, yeah. And
that's why when he's at the ball, he's looking for her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They even make reference. Are you looking for someone?
And then, of course, in this version, the king is dying,
mm-hmm.
which is ends up being very sad.
Yeah.
But it works well for the character of the prince because, you know, Cinderella, when she's at the ball, has a moment where she's fleeing, where she runs into the king,
mm-hmm.
and she apologizes and she tells him, I hope you know how much your son loves you and how much he cares for you and blah, 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 and so on. Like, she says all these things, and that kind of, like, changes his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he tells him, just marry for love. Marry that girl. Find that girl.
Yeah.
The clumsy girl who lost the shoe, you know? But then with the passing of the king, it works really well for Kit, because then it allows Kit to slowly become the man, his own man,
mm-hmm.
which for this version is important. But
yeah,
there's so many. Kenneth Branagh said in an interview that somebody told him, "Oh, so you stayed really close to the original 50s version, the 50s version," and he's like, "I don't think you watched the same film." But it goes back to what we were saying: like, if you passively watch something, mm-hmm. and especially if you haven't seen the original in a while.
Yeah.
It might seem like you held way too close to it, but when you watch them back to back, you realize how much changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you stay close enough and pay homage to the original.
Yeah.
Then you can mess with it and elaborate and so on. I think it handled the passing of time pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite parts is when the king dies and then you hear the narration. It talks about after the mourning period had ended, the prince announced that he was going to look for Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see all the ships, and when it's panning, all the flags go from half-mast up to the top of the mast.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah. It's so quick, but it's so well done.
Yeah.
Because it helps show the passage of time.
Hmm. Yeah, that's always cool when they have those little details. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
And then, of course, you know, in this version, you know, they have their moment where they get to talk to each other in the garden when they're at the ball. And every moment in this movie felt like a painting.
Mm.
It was just the cinematography and the shots and like the thought that went into almost every scene. It was just gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, I found myself watching, paying attention to the cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
That was something I found. Because I'm not well-versed. And the more we watch, then we talk and discuss, the more I've, and just for my own personal purposes as well, projects, I've been trying to pay attention a lot more. Even though I really should read something or watch something mm-hmm. about it. In general, everything we've watched so far from Kenneth Branagh, I've enjoyed. And so knowing the movie was made by him kind of forced me to do it on purpose.
You know what's funny is I feel like he really purposely was mellow for this film.
Mm.
Like, it definitely, when you know it's kind of Branagh, you're like, okay, I see it. But he can be very melodramatic.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I felt like he made sure not to be melodramatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For this film. And he made a point of saying a lot of times people shy away from sadness and hardships in stories with children. He says, but they're important.
Yeah.
It's like, because one, you can show that you can overcome it,
mm-hmm.
and two, that you'll prepare them for life. And Kate Blanchett was saying something about this too in an interview where she was talking about it, because she was very passionate about the film, and she was really praising like the traditional like feminine strengths and virtues that Cinderella had.
Okay.
And she definitely wanted to have a bit more understanding and to show more backstory for the stepmother.
Yeah.
As well. Just for motivation and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was saying there's a lot of really, at the time, there were a lot of really good role models for men in film,
mm-hmm.
but there weren't a lot for like traditional feminine women.
Mm.
And so she was really happy with this film.
That's cool. Yeah, you wouldn't hear that much.
Not nowadays.
Not nowadays.
No. Yeah, but I'm just bouncing all over the place. Was there anything about this film you disliked?
Besides the godmother, which I can't say I disliked it. I just...
You wanted more.
I wanted more.
Sure.
It took me out of it a little bit, which is funny because I don't remember my first time watching it that happening.
You were in a bad mood.
No. I think maybe it was just because of all the stuff I've seen her in,
mm-hmm.
I felt like she was flat compared to maybe some of her other performances because
mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot since then.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one of the things I love about this movie that I wish more people would do is he did use CGI and special effects, but he only really tried to use them to enhance what was real.
Okay.
So like they were definitely things that you could only really do with CGI, but then he would also like enhance the magic and mm-hmm. things like that. As much as possible, he always tried to film on location
mm-hmm.
or on sets.
Okay.
And I loved that
mm-hmm.
because it grounds the film.
Yeah.
And like there's so many other live actions where it's like so much CGI and anyway, you know, I don't want to go down that route, but but I just loved that. They literally built the ballroom.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang.
They built that entire set with real chandeliers commissioned for the film with real candles and a real live orchestra playing.
Wow.
And it was 500 extras, they said.
Dang.
Yeah. With like real jewelry from archives.
Wow.
Stuff like that.
Oh, and so Cinderella's French. It's kind of from France, the original.
Yeah, well, this version, yeah.
I liked how they kind of paid homage to that with the whole speaking in French.
Yeah. Well, because Kenneth Branagh said that he wanted to show that despite her circumstances and stuff, Cinderella is still very intelligent
mm-hmm.
and cultured
yeah.
and stuff. It's her circumstances that have suppressed her.
Mm-hmm.
And so they show her like learning things at a young age that her father and her family are teaching her and lessons and things like that. And like she'll quote amazing things.
Yeah.
That it shows that she is intelligent.
Yeah.
And it also, it plays to her character because she's not afraid to stand up for herself or speak up.
Correct.
Because when they say, you probably don't even know what that means in French. And then she responds in fluent French.
Yeah. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. So like it shows she's not completely passive or anything. Like she will stand up.
Yeah.
She will be slightly snarky, you know? So the biggest change from this one is the ending.
Correct.
And so this is similar to the 50s version
mm-hmm.
where the stepmother trips the one guy carrying the shoe and then he breaks it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like playing with the audience like, oh, this is not in the story. Like what's going to happen? And then Cinderella brings out the other slipper
mm-hmm.
and then it ends that way. For this one, it ended with as soon as Cinderella realizes that the prince wants to marry her,
mm-hmm.
she goes to get the slipper and leave,
mm-hmm.
which I love again, similar to the 50s version, right?
Yeah.
As soon as she sees her out, she's gone.
Yeah.
But then the shoe's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when we hear some of the backstory for the stepmother. And she has the slipper.
Mm-hmm.
And then in this one, it goes into her power play, right? Where she's like, I'm going to let you marry him, but I'm going to be the one in control here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to basically like the one, like the puppet master, you know, mm-hmm. it's like my daughters will have good matches and you will be the queen, but I will essentially control that boy.
Yeah.
And then Cinderella stands up and she's like, I will not let you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care what happens to me. She's like, she says, I could not stop you from marrying my father. I could not stop you from doing all that you've done,
mm-hmm.
but I will not let you like, essentially like ruin the kingdom.
Yeah.
And so, like, she, like, essentially sacrifices herself,
mm-hmm.
which is extraordinarily strong and good and amazing and horrible. But
yeah.
And so then, of course, the stepmother breaks the slipper, so then she has no way to prove that she's Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is what I really liked, is she finally is like, why are you the way you are?
Mm-hmm.
To her stepmother. And that's when the stepmother like emotionally responds, and she's like, it's because you are young and innocent and good. And she's like, and I am. And then she like stops and then just leaves. Like,
yeah.
Because she, but then it's enough that we know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she sees those good virtues and attributes in Cinderella. And she knows that she is this woman who's past her prime, mm-hmm. and has made horrible choices and so on. But she can't admit to that.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a great mix of exposition, mm-hmm. with,
but like just
a twist
enough
of an ending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so in this version, Cinderella is like content because like she has done this thing to protect the one she loves, but also the kingdom. And then the stepmother tries to make this deal with the Duke so that no matter what happens, like Cinderella will not be found.
Yeah.
And then the Duke will have, he made that whole deal with the Princess of Saragossa or whatever it was. And so like he's going to make it good. But in the end, there's the whole like, oh, the king was there the whole time, you know, which was kind of fun.
It was.
And so then he's there, but then he's there for the fitting.
Correct. Yeah.
But then I liked it because it also shows like he has grown as a person and he's aware that he can't trust the Duke. And,
yeah.
And so he's going to stand up for what he wants and to do and so on. And mm-hmm. the one he loves and everything. Especially because if you look at this one, probably a couple months at least have passed since mm-hmm. the ball.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he still loves her and wants to marry her and mm-hmm. stuff, you know, and he has his father's blessing and whatever.
Yeah.
But it's in this version, instead of the animal friends like helping her get out and like her going to try on the slipper,
mm-hmm.
she's just there singing. She's
don't the birds open the window though?
Yeah, so the birds get the attention
okay.
of the mice, and the mice work together to open the handle.
That's what it was.
And so that's when outside they all hear her mm-hmm. singing, and they're like, did you teach your cat to sing?
Yeah. And they did have the Lucifer in
there.
They
did, yes. Enough of him that it worked.
Where, yeah, it wasn't too much.
And it was a real cat.
Mm-hmm.
But then they have the moment where, you know, the captain of the guard goes to get her and her stepmother forbids her and she says, I'm her mother. And then she has that great moment where she says, you have never been and will never be my mother.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like all the things we all wanted her to say.
Mm-hmm.
But now she can say it because she
yeah.
can. And she like was holding out, hoping there was something kind of good, you know, and it just never happened. And
she gave them as much yeah. chance as she could.
Yeah. But I liked this because this one, it did dive a bit into something new where it was this, and it was hinted at earlier, but it's this idea of who is she, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the prince has a similar thing. Like, there's an identity thing for both of them.
Yeah.
Where it's like, who are we? And who will we be? And who do we choose to be? And that sort of thing.
Mm.
And so with her, she finds, like, she commits to being Cinderella.
Mm.
She's like, this is who I am. And she's like, I don't even know if that slipper will fit, but like, this is who I am. I'm just a common girl and whatever. And if you will marry me, like, you know, like, I love you, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, he loves her.
Mm-hmm.
And the shoe fits. But my favorite moment in this film, one of my favorite moments in this film, it's okay. there's too many, is the big difference at the end that I think a lot of non-Christians don't understand.
The forgiveness?
Yes.
Mm.
You're not going to see that again.
Yeah.
And it's not in the original. It's not even in the fairy tales. It was brand new.
Mm.
The fact that Cinderella forgives her stepmother. Because people don't understand forgiveness.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not going to allow you to affect me anymore. But I am releasing you from this.
That's true. Because even in the parole version, she forgives the stepsisters.
Kind of.
By finding them husbands.
Not like officially, but like she does look after them.
Yeah. But yeah, this
one. But
in
that one, the relationship wasn't as bad, though.
Yeah, true. And yeah, this one with a stepmother.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so powerful
mm-hmm.
that she makes that decision.
I actually liked that scene when it happened
yeah.
it was unfolding.
And mm-hmm. it was funny because everyone in the audience was like at bated breath, like, "What is she gonna say?" Because you know something's coming.
Yeah.
And then she just says, "I forgive you," and then it like cripples the stepmother.
Yeah. Today she would have flipped her off or something if they made it.
Pushed her, I don't know. Yeah. But it's so well done. It's so good.
Yeah.
And it's like it's just properly milked enough.
Mm.
Like not too much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I do like how in the end when they get married, It shows that it's snowing outside.
Was it?
Yes. Because it shows a passage of time again. So it shows you they didn't get married right away.
Oh, okay. I didn't really pay attention to that. I somehow missed that. Yeah.
It's also like really pretty, but...
Yeah, maybe I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But the whole bit where they have the two sets of parents in the portraits on the
that
wall.
That I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
Her parents, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It's like they've come together, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's true, because they were both orphans, if you will, at that point.
Yep. Ah, so good.
So, did you enjoy the movie?
Yes. This is my sister's favorite movie.
Oh, really?
And when I told her that we were going to do this for the episode, I said the other day, I was like, tonight or tomorrow, I'm going to watch your favorite movie. And before I even said, would you like to watch it with me? Before I finished, she's like, yes, right now, right now. My mom's like, you just made her day.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. And it's just so well thought out. And gorgeous, and it checks all the boxes.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's one of the it's a rarity, unfortunately, in regards to not just remakes, but I think in the movie industry in general. It's why we haven't had a lot of anything really good in the last 10 years. Well, we have. I'm being exaggerating, but still,
not a lot. Very few.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked the addition of Lavender Blue, the song.
Where's that from?
It's an old folk song.
Mm-hmm.
Disney originally had it in one of their movies from the early 60s, I think. Because it's like the song her mother sings, right? The mother sings it to her when she's a kid, and then she will sing it to herself. She sings it at the end. But did you notice when she goes to the ball, when she's walking down the stairs, it's an orchestral version of Lavender Blue?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so good. I just want to give a highlight real quick to the costumes and the sets and everything, because so much thought went into them, and it was like just the right amount of fantasy, but it was grounded in the 19th century, on purpose.
Yeah.
So it felt real enough, but it was just enough fantasy that it worked for the story, you know?
Yeah.
The costume designer specifically created costumes that she said that it was as if they were filming a 19th century period film in the 40s and 50s.
Hmm.
So it was like how they would dress the costumes,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So that's why you see, especially like in the stepmother, but even in like the stepsisters and some other people, like the costumes are a little bit more modern. Yeah, I don't want to overburden this episode, but there's nothing else you need to talk about?
No, I'm good.
Yeah. Should have brought my sister on for this one.
I'm sure she would have had a lot to add on. Actually, before we do, I wanted to actually, you were talking about the costuming. So was the costuming a specific time period? That crossed my mind when I was watching.
They were trying to ground it in the 1800s, kind of in the mid-1800s for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of played with it, you know, it was flexible. They also, especially at the ball, showed different cultures.
That I picked up on, because it was different princesses.
That was a lot of fun.
And, yeah.
Yeah, so it was very mid-1800s. Like, that was the look of it. But one fun thing about the costumes is for her ball gown.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to stay true to the original and, like, what to expect and all that. But one thing they wanted to do for this version is they really wanted to focus on Cinderella's simplicity.
Mm.
And that is what contrasts her from other people.
Yeah.
Especially her stepsisters. And so you'll notice she actually wears no jewelry at the ball.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But they did her hair in a way where it almost looks like she's wearing a tiara, but it's like a special braid.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so other than she really just has the dress and then the glass slippers, mm-hmm. which were made out of Swarovski crystal. And she never actually wore them because she couldn't. Yeah. But
can you imagine?
But they picked crystal because it sparkles and glass doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for her dress specifically for the ball, one, it's just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
They did. Some people don't like this. I have no problem with this. But they did enhance it digitally because in reality, the dress is not that vibrant blue.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, it's actually much more of a lighter of a muted color.
Okay.
And so the very vibrant blue they got in post-production.
Mm, okay.
But it took, I think they said, 500 hours to make each dress?
Dang.
And they had to have multiple, obviously.
Wow.
but it was, the yardage was outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And they purposefully designed it in a way where it would feel magical in a real way.
Mm.
They wanted it to feel like it was a watercolor.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had all these layers underneath, and each was different. And so each had a different color and feel and texture, but all felt very smooth.
Interesting.
And they purposely had it made in a way where it felt like it was lighter than it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that when you watch it. Like, it, they said that she stands out because everybody around her looks like they're wearing something very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see her, it's like ridiculously airy and light.
Interesting.
Hmm. And it, and so that gives this essence of magic,
yeah,
to it.
Okay.
It also helps her to stand out.
Yeah.
But
that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they didn't have many behind the scenes stuff on Disney Plus where I watched it, so.
Nope. You know where it was?
The DVD?
YouTube.
Oh, okay.
This, the live action version really takes you on an emotional ride.
Mm-hmm.
No, I agree. It's not afraid to take you there.
Yeah.
It will. I mean, even later in the film, like with the king dying and stuff, like, mm-hmm, it takes you all over the place.
But it's not too heavy either.
No, it's like, it's, yeah, just enough, and it really emphasizes the themes.
Yes, yes, I agree.
There's so much attention to detail in this. I noticed it this time around for sure. The world felt real because it felt lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And there was character parts, like... She goes into the kitchen, and then there's a drawing on the wall where you think, like, oh, that was from when she was a girl and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And those are things that, you know, all the other live actions don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, they felt like sets in the, mm-hmm, live action, other ones. But, and so, like, you see in this version, when she's a young girl, like, the house is well maintained and there's flowers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the videos I watched was showing, like, by the time the stepmother gets there, like, there are no more flowers, and like it feels more autumn.
Yeah.
And so like it's starting to change.
Mm-hmm.
And so then by the time that the father has died and stuff, like it starts to become overgrown and it's lost a lot of its grandeur and things, yeah, like that. But it's stuff that you have to kind of be looking for.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to rewatch it for some of those smaller details I wasn't aware of this the first time.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the part of our show where we talk about what type of adaptation is this. If you have not listened to our podcast before, you can go back and check out our trailer episode where we discuss the different types of adaptations that I've come up with. We have four. There's true to source material, there's expanded, there's artistic, and there's message driven. So let's start with the 1950 animated film version of Cinderella. What do you think this is, Romy?
It's... I always hate this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's more or less true to source material.
It's just a little difficult because it pulls from different things.
It is.
Things, there's not one original fairy,
correct,
tale that you can really go off of. So.
Yeah. So I that's where I'll lean.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. True to source material,
true,
huh?
True to source material.
Okay. I'll say expanded. Because,
wait,
you know...
for the cartoon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, they include the parts about the king.
Yeah, I guess.
The king giving the motivation.
Okay, I could see
and
that.
And I think it expands on Cinderella's character a bit. And
okay.
And, you know, everything with the mice, you know, so on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, just a little bit.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. I just kind of thought of singing as almost artistic, but not quite. But I didn't want to go down that route.
Sure.
I usually forget what artistic means. And I want to apply it to everything.
And then... what do you think about the 2015 live action?
That one definitely is expanded.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say it's expanded, and I would say it's message-driven, but not what we usually think of.
Okay.
Because we usually think of message-driven in that they've changed the message.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this one, they just really push the message. Because of how often they're quoting the "have courage and be kind."
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because it was hinted at in the original one, but in this one it's made very clear.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, because it's definitely expanded in that you see a lot more of the prince and you get a lot more of motivation and backstory. But I think it's also a little message driven in that they really just drive it home in this one.
Definitely. No, I agree with that one.
I just love how gorgeous this one is.
Mm-hmm.
I heard somebody once say that you could pause this movie at any moment and it looked like an art piece.
I agree.
I love that. Okay, well, I don't think we did it. So what about favorite characters?
Besides Cinderella? Or can we just...
Yeah, right. Well, you can pick either movie. Pick either version. What's your favorite character?
So in the animated one, it's interesting.
Gus.
I mean, I kind of... Okay, so I wanted to kind of say
just,
the mice.
It reminded you of yourself, right?
Yes. So just because I grew up with it as a kid and...
You grew up with mice?
Actually, I grew up with had a rat.
You had a fancy
pet rat? And it was my...
You had a fancy rat.
Yes, and he unfortunately froze to death one night.
Oh my God, what did you do?
We went to a church service for Christmas Eve, came home, and I forgot to bring his cage in because we would leave it outside because my mom didn't like the smell. And so I would bring him in every night, but I didn't realize how cold it was going to be. I was, I don't know, maybe sixth grade when it happened, fifth grade maybe.
Jeez.
And unfortunately, it was too cold and it was sad. We had a funeral.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. I think because as a kid, I didn't really resonate with the princess aspect of the story too much.
She wasn't a princess yet.
Well, yeah, but it was a girly cartoon for me growing up.
Mm.
And so...
You're like, ugh.
Well, now I look back and I watch kind of the mice aspects of it, and that's cool and whatever, but I see it now as filler.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas back then, I think that was probably the more entertaining. So I have an affinity for the mice characters.
Got it.
Even though now I see it differently as an adult.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll go with, sure, Gus. I mean, I like Jacques too. They're both, like, I really, like, those are the characters I kind of grew up with. So it's more of a, what would you call it? A childhood.
Affinity?
Those are the characters when I was a kid. It's a throwback.
Got it. Yeah.
I mean, maybe the king would be.
The king's mine.
Yeah.
I would definitely pick the king.
That would be my grown-up favorite. Yeah.
Yes, as a kid, I don't think I would have picked the king, but as an adult, I definitely pick the king because he's funny and he drives the plot. And
yeah.
I mean, other than the king, obviously Cinderella. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so then the live action version.
I mean, all
I'm just
in
gonna,
all.
I'm just going to say Cinderella.
Yeah, I was going to say I can't choose any other character except the main character.
And was it Lily James?
Mm-hmm.
Just such a great job. Yeah, she's my sister's favorite actress.
Interesting. Okay.
And Cinderella's her favorite movie, so.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think if I had to pick someone else other than Cinderella in the live action, I would maybe pick the stepmother. Just because Kate Blanchett does such a great job. Because you hate her, and you love to hate her, but then she has just enough vulnerability to make her interesting.
Hmm, okay.
So she does a good job of having... those levels and making her nuanced and all that. If I'm going to give special mention, then I want to say the fairy godmother.
Okay. The one character I wasn't impressed with.
I know. Yep.
Cool.
Okay. And so, ratings. We need to do ratings. So, for the animated Disney version.
Okay.
For arbitrary ratings, scale from 1 to 10. 1 being, I wish I never saw this, and 10 being, this is amazing, this is the best.
I probably would just give it a 6.
Okay.
Just because it's one of those that's in the background. The animation animation's cool, but it's not, they're not at their pinnacle yet.
Well, they did what they could with the money they had.
Correct. And... Yeah, in general, I think I've just watched the movie one too many times for it to be any higher.
Mm-hmm. I think you need to go back and watch it with nuanced eyes again.
Okay.
And remember, I think your issue was you watched it with passive viewing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You might like it more now after the podcast.
Plus those, we had mentioned about you sending me some videos. Once I watch those, perhaps once I watch them, I'll go back and rewatch it. I think part of it, like I said, is I was passive. My daughter would watch it over and
you're
over.
You're so passive,
and over. And so I think I have to, it is one I would have to rewatch with different eyes.
Mm-hmm. And actually like really pay attention.
Yes.
I think I'd give it a 7.
Okay.
Because I really enjoy it. And I think I enjoy it a lot more now. Because I haven't seen it in years before watching it this time around.
Okay.
And I think it was similar in that I just grew up with it. So it was like, well, I enjoy it, but I don't need to watch it because I've watched it so many times.
Oh, yeah.
But because I watched it for the podcast... I was watching and half the time I was like, oh, this is really good. This is much better than I remember.
Okay. I'll give it a rewatch.
Yeah. And the king's hilarious. So
true.
So, but I think I give it a 7 because there's definitely some slow moments. Like I said, some of my least favorite parts are some of the parts with the mice. I think they drag a bit. But generally, you know, it's a great film.
Yeah, no, I agree.
All right, so the live action version. Oh my, I think, you know what? I'm going to do it again. I haven't done it in a little while, so I think I can do it. I'm going to give it a 10.
I figured you would.
In my head, I was like, what would I give it? 8? 9? And I'm like, no, 10. Because this was good. It's a beautiful film.
Yeah.
I can't think of any part of it that bring it down. You know, I think it's well written and it's artistically interesting and it adapts it well. It fleshes out characters, but it stays true to the original. And yeah, I don't think anything's really out of place in it, for me at least.
So
if anything, it's just slightly slow.
Okay. I'm struggling. Part of me wants to give it. What's the highest I've ever given?
Oh, I don't think you've gone over 7.5.
Okay.
Maybe you've given an 8. I don't think I've ever heard you say 9. And I know you've never said 10.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what a 10 movie for me would be.
I'm far more generous than you are when it comes
yes,
to the ratings.
Yeah, I have a hypothesis regarding that, but that's more in regards to my personality than anything else.
Now I want
to
know.
It kind of has to do with how I see food. People will always come up to you and say, that was amazing, that was, you know, or movies. I mean, not just food, too, but...
God, you're compensating. Huh? You're compensating.
No, no. No, what I'm saying is that everyone
always
sees...
They don't think it's great, that means it's horrible.
Not that it's horrible, but it's like... For instance, someone will take a bite of a fruit and be like, this is an amazing strawberry. And I'll taste it and I'll be like, you know, on the grand scheme of strawberries, it's all right.
I attribute that to two different things. One, I find Americans, especially Californians, tend to over-exaggerate.
Okay, that makes sense.
And two, I think most people don't possess enough vocabulary to be able to express what they think.
That makes more sense.
And so it's easier just to be like, this is the best, this is amazing.
Okay. And see, I find the same thing with media. You know, people will be like, this is an amazing song.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna say something that may turn off half our
all right, turn it
non
up. Turn it up
audience, but I don't
no, they're an audience because it's
no
audi-
we have an audience
audio.
I don't think the Beatles are very great.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry to offend any of our listeners out there, but I don't. I'll listen to the music. In fact, I
all
have
right.
an album.
We,
but
we went there.
Yes, but I don't think they're great.
Do you want to hear my opinion?
What's your opinion?
I also don't think the Beatles are that great.
Okay, we're in agreement.
Here's the thing. I can respect the Beatles.
Yeah, me too.
And here's the thing. I prefer early Beatles.
Okay.
Because I think the early Beatles are more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it when they got really hippie.
Yeah.
And druggy.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing. I find I really love Beatles songs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it when the Beatles sing their songs.
That's interesting.
I love their covers.
I haven't thought of it
that Anytime
way.
I've heard people cover Beatles songs,
yeah.
Like more often than not, when I hear the cover, I'm like, oh, I really like this.
That explains why I like playing Beatles songs on Rock Band.
Yeah.
But anyway, so with that saying, I'm very particular even about my television and movies and stuff.
Okay. You're
but
protective.
I am. But all that aside, I there's not a lot of movies I can say are great. And so there's something in my soul that wants to give it a 10.
Do it.
but
something has to be.
The rational part of me wants to say, just give it a 9.
Well, think
just
about
be
it.
Safe.
No,
play
think
it
about
safe.
It. Think about it. What about this movie did you not like? Is there anything about this movie you did not like that you thought maybe could have been better?
I mean, so, okay. Even going back to Bellatrix Lestrange.
Uh-huh.
So once you explained it to me, it made sense. Because
uh-huh.
you said she was... It was supposed to be part of the way she was presenting the character.
Mm-hmm.
And so that actually sways me over even more. I mean, the music was great. The cinematography was great. The background, okay. That convinces me.
And it's also a very tight script.
It is. And I'm becoming a little more cognizant of cinematography mm-hmm. and the music and script writing as
yeah,
well.
That's what's fun about doing this podcast is it really kind of tunes you into
does,
a lot
yes.
more.
That's why, once again, our listeners, I highly recommend you watch and even read what we talk about. It helps. It helps a lot. And so with all that said, I, for the first time, will give it a 10.
Woo! Wow. I can die now.
It took a long time to get there.
Nice. High five. No, louder. They need to hear it.
That was not. That was a high five. You just missed it. One day we'll have video.
Jeez. Nobody wants that. That's two things I'd have to edit.
I know.
I swear, if we did a video, I would just be like, okay, here, Patreon. I'm not editing this one. You can just watch it.
Just don't take anything out of context that Romy says, please.
I should just completely edit the podcast so that it makes like you sound ridiculous. Just move all of your words around.
That kind of would be funny.
Well, we'll call it. If you haven't seen this movie, please go watch this movie.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure most everyone has seen the Disney version, at least the cartoon animated feature. Mm-hmm.
And give it another chance if you didn't like it. Mm-hmm. But we are going to be taking a break after this. And so bear with us while we take our little summer hiatus here. We're going to take this time to catch up on recording and to prepare for more future episodes.
So it's more break for you than for us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So take a look out in maybe about a month or so. We'll start busting out some more episodes. But we have some good ones coming up. I don't want to give anything away necessarily, but there's some very popular stories coming your way.
Well, thank you for joining us. I want to just reiterate what Eric said, is if you have seen these movies, if you've listened to us, I think it would be beneficial to go back, just like I plan to rewatch it, to see some of the things that he pointed out, I should say, that I missed. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you'll enjoy it and get a deeper appreciation for it as I have.
Yeah, and we've said it before, we'll say it again. We can do a revisited episode. Mm-hmm. So if you have some ideas, comments, arguments, I don't know, and you want to reach out to us, you can email us, leave us a comment, whatever, you know, let us know.
Yes.
And we can go from there.
All right.
All right. You all have a good summer, and we will catch you soon.
Yes.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please follow or subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also like it if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.